Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:21 p.m. and that is Pacific Summer Time, and today is April 19th. Well, I'm starting off with Coinbase because the price is giving, I think, a lot of retail investors a crash course in the difference between an IPO and a direct listing. Generally speaking, direct listings are reasonably rare and they mostly appeal to retail investors because the company is relying on a groundswell of support or demand for the stock. One thing though that is, and of course the company itself is also seeking to avoid paying investment banking fees by taking out a direct listing. But an additional point, of course, is that by when you look at a regular IPO, it creates additional shares, and therefore, in order to preserve the value of the shares, there are limits put on the amount that insiders can sell and when they can sell them, and there are no such limits on a direct listing. So a lot of Coinbase employees let go of their shares during the surge in interest, where we saw the initial value of one share rise from $250 to in excess of $450 in the space of 24 hours, and they sold approximately $5 billion worth of those shares. Well, since that peak around $460, we are now at a price of $330, so that's still well above the initial expected value, but significantly below the peak value, and a lot of people will have bought on the 14th and are now sitting with losses. So what do they do when they have losses? Well, they do the exact same thing as everybody else, and they sell where they have profits in order to cover the loss. And that's exactly what happened with Bitcoin. And Bitcoin's price pulled back by in the region of 15% last night. Well, it was really on Sunday morning. And today it did not rebound to any real measurable extent. The challenge is that we've had a meaningful loss of consistency over the last 2 months. Now, this isn't the first time it's gone through a process of consolidation that has lasted months. We've definitely seen that back in August and September, and again between May and July. But the difference on this occasion is that what we have now is an inconsistent trend, whereas previously it was a very consistent trend, and that's particularly true when we look at the log scale, where we have these ranges one above another, and that's no longer the case. We now have failed upside breaks, and this is particularly relevant because it's a trend that did not previously have them. We didn't have any real big evidence of a failed upside break previously, but they certainly started to creep in March, and we saw another one last week. And if there were a midpoint danger line stop, it has been triggered. And anyone who is looking at this trend as an investment vehicle, well, then they need to come in with a greater realization of the potential for volatility, because the potential for volatility means that the incredible advances we've seen over the last year could very easily be unwound in a very quick and profound manner, because that's what investors in Bitcoin have been conditioned to expect. Pullbacks of 90% are not uncommon. We've had two previously, and the pullback in the early part of 2020, or really, let me just put this up on a weekly basis. The pullback, for example, from 2017 through to the beginning of 2018 or 2019 was in the order of 80%. So these types of pullbacks are not beyond the bounds of possibilities at all. And this loss of momentum is a significant factor. Then, of course, we have the additional point that it's got a market cap of about $1 trillion. And perhaps a bit more than that right now. And in order for the most bullish prognostications to be credible, we would need to see a further acceleration in money printing. We've had over $5 trillion printed by the US government and central bank alone in the last 12 months, and a good part of that has found its way into Bitcoin. So that would need to be repeated in order to repeat the kind of advance in prices we've seen. And we have these kinds of forecasts that Bitcoin's price is going to go to $100,000, $1 million, $5 million, and it's currently at 56,000. So even for it to get to 100,000, it means that the market cap would have to increase by $1 trillion. And that's a lot of money. Even today, that's a lot of money. And what it suggests is that this has been a lightning rod for speculation, and there's been a lot of people coming into it. But failed upside breaks tell us one thing about supply and demand, and it is that the vacuum of supply above the range has not formed. And therefore, the question we need to ask is whether the vacuum of demand below the range has formed. Because if it has, then there is the clear potential that we could have a type 2 top formation completion, which would be a massive reaction against the prevailing trend where Bitcoin could fall 30% in a day. And unfortunately, that is the simple potential reality. Now, if we saw contagion from Coinbase into Bitcoin, then we need to prepare for the potential that if Bitcoin were to pull back in a dynamic fashion and then consider where did that $1 trillion market cap come from and the hundreds of billions that were committed to Bitcoin over the course of the last 12 months, well, a good part of that came from institutional investors. And what would institutional investors sell in order to fill a hole left in their P&L by Bitcoin? Well, the simple answer is they would sell stocks. And the S&P 500 is really quite overextended relative to the trend mean. And every time it gets this overextended, about 15%, then it starts to pull back. And we've seen plenty of examples of that over the course of the last year. So it wouldn't be, over the last few years, I should say. So it wouldn't be at all beyond the bounds possibility that we get some pause and consolidation in here that would help to unwind the overbought condition, and that would be a healthy characteristic because we've had this incredible advance over the course of the last year. The other thing that I think is particularly relevant we need to pay attention to is the best year to be a stock market investor over the last decade was 2017. It might not have been the most impressive on the upside, but it didn't pull back. We didn't have a pullback of more than 3% at any point in 2017. And that also happened to be the year when Bitcoin did spectacularly well. And then we look at the incredible performance up from the lows in 2020. Well, we did have a wobble in the stock market around the end of the summer, and subsequently it pushed on to new high ground. And we've had a little wobble along the way in Bitcoin as well around the summer, and then it pushed on to new high ground. But this correlation between cryptocurrencies and the stock market can't be ignored. So if the Bitcoin price pulls back further and clearly breaks downwards, well, then that will start to raise the potential for contagion. And of course, the most important thing about contagion isn't so much whether there is in fact a causal relationship, but whether investors believe there will be a causal relationship and start to sell in anticipation of it. Of course, we also should remember that Bitcoin peaked about 3 weeks before the stock market in 2018. So, I think this is a particularly relevant time to start thinking about some of the shares that have done spectacularly well and are very overextended relative to their respective trend means. When we think about the number of stocks that are trading above their 200-day moving averages, well, we're at pretty high levels on an historical basis. And if we just look at this over the last number of decades, then values over 80% don't generally tend to hold for very long. So we've had an incredibly profound advance, particularly up off the lows from 2008 and 9. It was an even quicker advance, and it went to an all-time high. And now we've had a very similar condition. And you can see that it pulled back in 2010 and 11, and we had a more rangy environment overall. And yet the direction of trade in the stock market was up over all that time. But it didn't mean that every stock went up as quickly, and that we definitely had a rolling consolidation where different sectors did better than others. And we may be starting to move into that kind of situation now, because with the rollout of vaccines and the potential for greater herd immunity and for the potential that the worst really is behind us, well, the rationale for continuing to print trillions and trillions of dollars will be less convincing. But then we can think about what's happening with the dollar. And it is clearly now breaking downwards. It's broken the sequence of higher reaction lows up from the lows in January. It's confirming resistance in the region of the trend mean. The most important thing, though, is that this looks like a type 3 top formation. And we have ranging time and size, and it is encountering resistance in the region of the trend mean. It is barely steady at the lower side of the range, and there is clear potential that it is going to break downwards from here. Now we can look at some of the currencies that have been doing better against the dollar, and the pound was up in excess of a cent in here today and pushing back up towards this 140 area, and it looks like a base formation that is primed to be completed. Then we can think about the euro, and it has clearly now firmed from the region of the trend mean, and it is trading back above that psychological 120 area. And then the renminbi, which, excuse me, not the Japanese yen, I will come to the renminbi. The yen is now firming from that 110 area and continuing to hold its sequence of higher reaction lows, which is depicted here inversely with a downtrend for the dollar overall. There's a lot of talk about China's digital currency, and the renminbi is strengthening again. So, having unwound a good portion of its overbought condition, it is now coming back down. The Taiwanese dollar, which had been weakening over the course of the last few months, has also started to appreciate again, not least because it's been labeled a currency manipulator. Of course, the irony of that statement will not be lost on investors because the greatest currency manipulator of them all is the US. And they are actively waging a war of depreciation. They're trying to devalue the currency in as swift a manner as they can. And that is something that I think many people will be paying attention to. So gold prices were a little bit weaker in here today because investors are not yet convinced that the low is in, because the consistency of the downtrend has been characterized by greater than $100 rebounds from big round numbers, because it bounced like that from 1900 and 1800, and it's done it again from 1700. And it has paused around the $1800 area. So in order to clearly demonstrate that we're back on a demand-dominated environment for gold, it's going to have to hold the low around 1700 and subsequently push on to exceed the 1860 level and establish itself above that level. There was news last week that China's import window is opening up, that Indian demand looks like it has bottomed, but the other big I think a thing that people monitor is ETF demand, and that is still declining. And that's suggestive of the fact that I think investors want to see clear evidence that gold has in fact bottomed. So we're not there yet. I think on a seasonal basis, we're approaching the time when gold should do better, but we're not there just yet. And it would suggest that I think investors or institutional investors are still biding their time. But as the dollar pulls back and as the outlook for continued monetary and fiscal support, even though we are coming out the other end of the pandemic, remains, then it's quite likely that we are going to see additional interest in gold as a hedge against the active and real-time depreciation in the purchasing power of fiat currencies. When we then think about the bond markets, treasuries are really quite oversold and they are due an additional rebound. The price was in negative territory today and it has continued to hold at the 132 level. I'm still long, but I'm not certainly not going to burn for the faith. And if prices exceed or come backwards in a dynamic manner, my break-even stop will be triggered. I do, however, think that it is likely we're going to see additional strength in the futures market. When we think about the yield, just looking at it on the other way around, it's very or it's way overextended relative to the trend mean. It wouldn't be at all surprising that we get some additional consolidation in here. And that is even in a scenario where the low around the 50 basis point level is unlikely to be exceeded. Then when we think about the European markets, well, with a stronger currency, then the stock market was in mildly negative territory. European stocks generally tend to do best when the euro is weak. So when it strengthens, it represents a bit of a headwind. But as the global economy opens back up, then I think investors are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to Europe and its leverage to the global economy and the ability for a more sustained rally. What I found particularly interesting today was that copper prices were quite firm, and that is also speaking to renewed enthusiasm for global expansion. And again, that is likely to be of great benefit to both Europe and to Japan overall. Of course, the continued strength of the industrial resources sector is a further clue for what investors are expecting from the global reflation, that infrastructure development on a broad global scale is likely to be the primary conduit for the investments by governments and central banks that to try and get people back to work and reinvigorate economic growth on a global basis. So the resources sector does look like it is going to continue to do well from here. And we can think about the continued performance of the FTSE 350 mining index, and it is rebounding from the region of the trend mean, and this looks like a first step above the base. The copper miners sector, or ETF, is really shares a very similar chart pattern overall. This also looks like a little first step above the base. And then, of course, we have the gold miners, which have come right back down to test the region of the upper side of the base and then bounced. And the price was up in a dynamic manner last week, but it is now steadying again in the region of this trend mean. If it can sustain a move back above that level, well, then we have clear confirmatory evidence that the lows are in. I think that there's a fighting chance that that is indeed the case. But institutional investors are probably waiting for clear confirmation before they commit significant funds. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.